Hello, ladies and gents. This is your host, Kim, and this is another episode of How to Get Away with Law, an unofficial podcast for the hit ABC show, How to Get Away with Murder. And I apologize, I had warned you guys that this episode would come out late because I'd be on vacation, and even worse, not only am I on vacation, but I am also sick. So, isn't that a nice double whammy? Not only am I on vacation, you're supposed to be enjoying this time, I'm also sick, but hey, I guess the best time to possibly be sick is on vacation because I don't have to be at work dealing with people while being sick. And I'd be at home doing nothing anyway, but I decided I would delay the podcast a little bit more until my throat wasn't as scratchy. So if I sound weird, I start coughing or gagging in the middle of this, sorry. Anyway. After all that, let's get into the recap for episode 7 of season 2, I Want You to Die. And disclaimer before I start, as usual, so that you don't always have to hear my exact words, I hunt around the interwebs and find a recap from someone on the internet. And this week, I got it from www.ew.com, Entertainment Weekly, and this was written by Justin Kirkland. And this one's a long one, so I'm hoping it's a good one. So let's get into the recap for Season 2, Episode 7, I Want You to Die. If How to Get Away with Murder ever attempted to execute a holiday episode, I like to believe this would be it. It's full of presents as far as the eye can see. You like court cases? Have four of them. Startling confessions? There are a couple of those, too. If you leave the cookies out for Santa, Oliver's got the milk covered. And to top it all off, there's Bonnie Claus, who prefers, instead of using the chimney, to drop her presents right on your front doorstep. You're right. It's much too early for a holiday episode of anything, but as How to Get Away with Murder steams toward its winter finale, no detail is being spared to get there. Oliver is missing. Wes might be Annalise's son. And Bonnie has upgraded her permit to kill to a full-blown license. Night of the Fancy Mansion. Back at the scene, Michaela tries to stop Connor from leaving the Hapstall house while Laurel and Wes overhear their conversation. Wes appears to be holding the gun, and as Connor flees initially, Wes tells Laurel that they have to stop him. They run out on the balcony, and Wes yells for Connor and Michaela to stop, but ADA Sinclair's body toppling to the ground interrupts them. On the second story, as Wes and Laurel, but above them is our girl Bonnie, looking down on her handiwork. If you turn up the volume, you can hear her softly singing, "It's raining, ADA Sinclair. Hallelujah, it's raining, ADA Sinclair." Okay, I made that part up. Can't get anything past you guys. Charter Lake is Bonnie's thing. Bonnie almost immediately calls out Asher for what he did at Charter Lake. She announces it in front of Michaela, who is immediately interested. Granted, all she finds is Asher's By Felicia music video. When he chases her down, she says, "You could have stopped them. It's nice to know that Asher's not the rapist, but we still have big issues." Four guys took Tiffany upstairs and Asher stayed downstairs, called his dad because he was concerned, and then his dad had covered it up. Now Tiffany is out there living with the truth every day while Asher's life has primarily consisted of finding the perfect beige suit. If that's not privilege, I don't know what is. Asher follows Bonnie around like a puppy, trying to form an explanation that he was stupid and he's sorry and he'd offer her money, but nothing is enough for Bonnie. He gets to be oblivious and the fun guy while Tiffany hurts. Bonnie can't look at him the same anymore, and Asher says, "I understand because it's your thing." Bonnie's heartbroken and says, "She told you, didn't she?" Annalise comes home from her Eve date, all smiles and rainbows, and there sits Bonnie, disgusted with Annalise for telling Asher about her past. Drunk Bonnie tells Annalise that she's ruined the one good thing she had in her life, and that she doesn't know how to love anyone. And Bonnie finishes with, "I wish you would die. I wish it were you they killed in this house, and not Sam." Wes has two mommies. 4 days before the night of the fancy mansion, we're in Wes's apartment. He hops out of the shower in a towel, and all of a sudden, there's three guns in the room. Oh, sorry. I mean, Wes's exposed biceps and a real gun. A gun that looks just like the one from the flash forward. He puts it away and gets to the office. He is originally assigned to the case of the week, but then he gets reshuffled to keep tabs on the Nia Leahy murder case, where Nate is casually being framed for a second murder tied to Annalise. He watches the case unfold and reports back to Annalise when he suspects that Eve has thrown the case. In the end, Eve and Wes share a quick moment outside of the courtroom when Eve realizes that the person Annalise has been protecting all along has been Wes. Annalise tries to rebuff her questions, but finally gives up and says, "He's not some student. It's him. Him." It sounds like someone might be admitting to a smidgen of motherhood, which leads us to this theory. I'm not going to try and touch on the movie motive behind it, but what if Annalise's shooting is staged, leaving Wes's adopted mother dead and Wes's biological mother bleeding out? After Annalise's little speech to Wes last week pushing blame over on him, Wes would not only have two mommies, but also potentially be responsible for both of their deaths. Poor track record. Mia's death and Eve's return. You know what they say. Frame me for murder once, shame on you. Frame me for murder twice, shame on me. Nate gets served papers for Nia's death as he's packing up her stuff. Sinclair is bringing him up on murder charges based off the pills Nia requested from Annalise. After she finds out, Annalise goes to visit Eve, who is defending Nate. She tells Annalise to stay away from Nate while she handles it. Not being one to ever be totally hands-off, Annalise confronts ADA Sinclair in the courthouse and says, "You're messing with the wrong bitch." And when Sinclair asks if it's a threat, Annalise says, "I guess we'll see." Annalise and Eve meet up in a car and get flirty, as schoolgirls do. Eve admits that she's a little happy that Nate killed his wife because that means that she gets to see Annalise again. It's really sweet, you know, fancy running into you at work where we defend murderers way. They imagine running away and opening up a firm in Paris. What a time to be alive. The trial starts for Nia's death. ADA Sinclair, hell-bent on sending someone to jail, is using an adorable oncology nurse to build a case around Nate. She's the same one that finished the scarf Nia was making, and based on her outburst about having the right to die, I'm surprised that Eve doesn't try to pin the murder on her. Instead, she doesn't even cross-examine the nurse, and the judge decides the outcome in 15 minutes. Nia's blood will be tested. Annalise and Eve meet up again, and while Eve is super concerned about mozzarella sticks and potato skins, same girl, Annalise wants to know if she threw the case. Eve says she didn't, and that she purposely didn't cross-examine the nurse so that she'd stay on their side. Eve has a plan in place, and within that insurance, Annalise totes game for moz sticks. Outside the hospital, Eve and Nate regroup and review their plan before Nate goes in to talk to Scarf Nurse. The nurse apologizes for her courtroom execution, and Nate tells her that is why he's at the hospital. Cut to the lab results being read for it, and lo and behold, there were no drugs found in Nia's system. Scarf Nurse cuts Nia's storyline out of the pictures as swiftly as it was brought in. Oliver, Philip, and the Hapsall case. Since Oliver tracked down Philip, the Keating 5 is super jazzed about focusing in on him as the prime suspect, so much so that Oliver is brought on as a team member. Steam member is what I almost said. Anyway, back to the recap. Connor is 100% not chill with it, but that can't be stopped. He confronts Oliver, but he's like, "Bae, stop being a buzzkill. That's not the kill he should be worried about." Annalise and Oliver's first meeting is wonderful. She acknowledges that he saved her ass and he just blushes. I'm supporting them as a platonic power couple. In the hunt for Philip, he baits him on a dating site, but it takes two techies to virtually tango, and as we learned last week, Philip has presumably already seen Oliver via hacked webcam, which is why mine is now covered with duct tape. No one is safe, y'all. On the dating site, he uses Connor's picture. When Connor doesn't agree to the date, Oliver says he'll do it and will say that he used Connor's picture because he has low self-esteem. Pretty hurts. That's what it says, hashtag pretty hurts. Anyway. Back to the recap. Connor's morality and protective nature is coming out just as Oliver is ready to go full crazy. The date happens, but it ends up being Connor who is waiting for Philip at the coffee shop that night. Aside, does coffee not affect these people at all? Outside, Frank, Michaela, and Laurel wait in the car. Being the smart one, Laurel bails to tattle to Annalise and runs directly into Philip. Annalise calls back and tells Frank to get Connor out of the date. Meanwhile, Oliver fumbles in his apartment, singing Asher's by Felicia frat boy music video and juggling groceries when Philip follows him in, causing him to spill milk. No one cried over it yet, but he did scare the hell out of Oliver and asked, "How's your night going?" The case of the week. Annalise and the crew has been hired to defend Dale, a man who has been accused of driving his ex-husband Marco to suicide. Dale seems pretty cavalier about the whole thing, but cavalier doesn't win murder cases. They almost nailed the case down by pinning the suicide on Marco's alcoholism, but the 911 call reveals that Marco clearly had a man drive him to jump off a building. Laurel uses Oliver's expertise to find out where the ex, Sharon, lives and finds out that she doesn't live at the building Oliver directed her toward. But it is the building that ADA Nelson lives at, the same ADA that is representing Susan, the one having sexy time with Susan, and the same ADA that caused Marco to kill himself. For backup, Laurel coaxes the building's doorman to the courtroom and traps him there as a material witness. ADA Nelson pleads the fifth, and even though he's responsible for murder, he's still the most likable ADA in this episode. Upset because it appears Annalise is being hard on her about Frank, Laurel confronts Annalise, who starts spitting truth at her and tells her that she knows that she's smart and capable, which is why she doesn't talk to her. She follows up with, "Go back to the office and stop being needy." Laurel is such a millennial. Pretty simple episode this week with not many details, right? Wrong. Where did Oliver go? Could Annalise really be Wes's mom? Was Annalise making a really passe joke about trophy millennials by offering Laurel the trophy? So many unanswered questions. So few episodes left until we find out who shot Annalise. In the meantime, watch out for falling bodies because Bonnie is making it rain. Once again, sorry for all the coughing and hacking. That's the suckiness of being sick, but hey, still doing the podcast here. Alright, so let's get into my comments for this episode. Right into the flash forward. Connor to Michaela. "No more excuses, we know better this time." Uh-oh. Now, when I was watching this episode, I was thinking, is that Laurel holding the gun? Or is that Wes holding the gun? And then all of a sudden I was thinking, and Wes wants to stop Michaela and Connor? Okay, alright, where are we going with this scenario? Then we jump back into the past. And then I'm thinking, way to pick up a gun with bare hands, Wes. Then, finally I get my brain settled. We move on with the story. Annalise decides to take the story of Philip Jessup to her college class. Nice way to get outside theories and get the story. I don't know, get some ideas. She does this a lot, as we've seen in the two seasons so far. And I'm starting to wonder if Jessup can find a way to hack into the students' laptops for class notes and case notes. It would be a nice convenient thing since he knows about Connor and Oliver. So, hey, IT nerds unite to hack... don't hack computers. It's bad. Don't do it. Sinclair strikes again. Nick gets served papers that Nia's death was foul play. Nia was cremated, but blood samples were taken after she was dead for some clinical trial, and she wants blood samples taken. Okay. And thankfully, Eve is back. But, damn, this whole love triangle. Alright, we'll get into that a little bit later. So Asher wasn't one of the people who raped Tiffany, but he didn't help because he was drunk. Still, not a good thing or a good look. If there is rape, you need to find a way to stop it. And ew, Frank and Laurel doing it not in the basement of Annalise's house. Gross. The basement is bad enough, but ew. Ew. Annalise's case of the week. I'm not sure I liked the ex-husband Dale. The guy's a pretentious douchebag. However, it did bring me to the law terms for this week, which I pulled out. Well, it's not exactly a term, but it's Rule 804, Hearsay Exceptions, Declarant Unavailable. And I pulled this out because of Marco's 911 call that was mentioned in the court case before his suicide. And here we go. The definition of unavailability. Unavailability as a witness includes situations in which the declarant, one, is exempted by a ruling of the court on the ground of privilege from testifying concerning the subject matter of his or her statement, or 2, persist in refusing to testify concerning the subject matter of his or her statement despite an order of the court to do so, or 3, testifies to a lack of memory of the subject matter of his or her statement, or 4, is unable to present or testify at the hearing because of death or then existing physical or mental illness or infirmity, or 5, is absent from the hearing and the proponent of the witness's statement has been unable to procure the witness's attendance, or in the case of a hearsay exception under subdivision B, 2, 3, or 4, the witness's attendance or testimony by process for other reasonable means. Hearsay exceptions. The following are not excluded by the hearsay rule if the declarant is unavailable as a witness. 1. Former testimony. Testimony given as a witness at another hearing of the same or different proceeding, or in a deposition taken in compliance with law in the course of the same or another proceeding, if the party against whom the testimony is now offered, or in a civil action or proceeding, a predecessor in interest had an opportunity and similar motive to develop the testimony by direct, cross, or redirect examination. 2. Statement under belief of impending death. In a prosecution for homicide or in a civil action or proceeding, a statement made by a declarant while believing that his or her death was imminent concerning the cause or circumstances of what the declarant believed to be impending death. 3. Statement against interest. A statement which was at the time of its making so far contrary to the declarant's or proprietary interest, or so far tended to subject the declarant to civil or criminal liability, or to render invalid a claim by the declarant against another, that a reasonable person in this position would not have made the statement unless the person believed it to be true. A statement tending to expose the declarant to criminal liability and offered to exculpate the accused is not admissible unless corroborating circumstances clearly indicate the trustworthiness of the statement. 4. Statement of personal or family history. A statement concerning the declarant's own birth, adoption, marriage, divorce, legitimacy, relationship by blood, adoption or marriage, ancestry, or other similar fact of personal or family history, even though declarant had no means of acquiring personal knowledge of the matter stated, or B, a statement concerning the foregoing matters and death also of another person, if the declarant was related to the other by blood, adoption or marriage, or was so intimately associated with the other's family as to be likely to have accurate information concerning the matter declared. 5. Statement of a deceased person in actions, suits, or proceedings by or against the representatives of deceased persons, including proceedings for the probate of wills. Any statement of the deceased, whether oral or written, shall not be excluded as hearsay, provided the trial judge shall first find as a fact that the statement was made by descendant and that it was made in good faith and on descendant's personal knowledge. And 6, other exemptions. A statement not specifically covered by any of the foregoing exemptions but having equivalent circumstantial guarantees of trustworthiness, if the court determines that A, the statement is offered as evidence of a material fact, B, the statement is more probative on the point for which it is offered than any other evidence which the proponent can procure through reasonable efforts, and C, the general purposes of these rules and the interests of justice will be best served by admission of the statement into evidence. However, a statement may not be admitted under this exception unless the proponent of it makes known the adverse party sufficiently in the advance of the trial or hearing to provide the adverse party with a fair opportunity to prepare to meet it, the proponent's intention to offer the statement and the particulars of it, including the name and address of the declarant. There you go. Some knowledge about the hearsay. Now back to the comments about the episode. What? Oliver's reporting to Frank now. Well, now I guess he's getting in the mix, becoming part of the Keating gang. I hope he's getting a big fat paycheck. And Eve's glad Nate killed his wife so she could see Annalise again. I mean, Eve, no. I thought this was cute before, but Eve, don't get sucked into this. And eventually, maybe you'll end up murdered because death just surrounds Annalise. I mean, whoever you were banging on the side that you said who isn't worth Annalise getting jealous over, just stick with that chick. Stick with the side piece. I know Annalise is a fine, fine woman. And, you know, the bad ones, the crazy ones, the one that broke your heart is always attractive and you just want to always be with them. Stay away, Eve. Stay away. It's not a good idea. Death just circles around Annalise. But Oliver, when he met Annalise, aw. I mean, he's gonna die too. He's gonna die. You and Eve, Oliver and Eve, you will die. Wes on the case, except now, not on the, nope, I guess, well, I guess suicide is a sensitive subject for Wes, considering his mom committed suicide, or did she? What? Who is Wes's mom? Moving right along from that. So the witness, the nurse, strikes on an issue that I've run up against recently. Why it shouldn't be legal to help someone you love in their suffering. And trying not to get too political here, because that's just not what I'm going to do on this podcast. But I see her point there. I mean, Nia was all for it. I mean, she's suffering slowly. She's like, hey, I am coherent enough to say, come on, end it. It's not like she was delirious, like she was slobbering and everything and passing in and out of consciousness. She literally was like, please, oh my goodness, somebody get these pills. I told you I'm coherent enough to tell you the exact pills. I told you, Annalise, I told my husband, I told you the exact method, please, just end it. And, you know, I mean, with that admission, yeah, Eve could have easily been like, boom, the nurse did it. There's my perfect out. Throw that chick under the bus. And at this point, you're thinking, either you can pin and say, oh, this nurse was in love with Nate, and maybe she killed Nia. Or maybe Nate was screwing the nurse. Something like that, but nope, that is not the route they took. I'm kind of glad they didn't make some weird love pentagon going on and be like, Nia, Nate, nurse, Eve, and all sorts of weird crap going on in there. And I'm great. Oliver looked up Trotter Lake. Asher should have known with this group that they were going to look up his past once it was mentioned. I'm glad Bonnie stopped it and she just did it without making it look like she was trying to cover anything up. She just was like, get to work, slackers. Now Sharon, like to get back to the case of the week, Sharon, Marco's wife, was screwing the prosecutor, of course, and Annalise trusted Laurel to do what she had to do to make sure it was the truth. So Laurel and Asher get the doorman to come to the courthouse, and it was pretty amusing. And I love when the actress, I think it was Carla Souza, I think it is. As far as I know, I think she is of Hispanic origin, and I think does have that awesomely cool, thick accent. So I really like when she busts that out. And, I mean, she's talking like that and looking like that at me. Shoot, I would follow her anywhere, so it was pretty funny. He got suckered in. I felt bad for him. But, hey, they had to do what they had to do because that ADA was just wrong. But Annalise saying that she doesn't pay attention to Laurel, and it's a good thing because it means she doesn't have to worry about her like the others. And I go back and forth on wondering if I like Laurel or not, because sometimes she can be annoying, but her suspicion sometimes leads her to good ends. Like, she pretty much figured that chick out in a couple episodes ago, the teenager who stabbed the crap, like, 52 times out of her friend, figured out that chick was a sociopath pretty darn early. So sometimes Laurel's instincts are pretty good. So her nose for mischief and figuring things out, you know, is pretty good. So I guess Annalise is dead on about that. The blood test for Nia shows there was no psychobarbital or anything lethal in Nia's blood, and Nate's free. And Wes questions Eve, but she didn't claim anything, though. She went with Nate to the hospital to talk to the nurse. Interesting. Nobody finds anything suspicious. Nobody really cares. They're like, why is so much weird stuff happening with Annalise? They're like, okay, this chick is tied to all sorts of stuff, and we still haven't closed this case about Sam's murder. What the heck? I don't know, but maybe that's just, they're like, what? We can't really take that into account. This isn't the same case. This is a different case, so we're not gonna take that into account. Whatever, I don't know. She told you, didn't she? Oh, snap. Now Bonnie knows. Which pretty much confirms something did happen to Bonnie in the past. But I can't tell you that exactly confirms that video. I'm still holding on to maybe that's not exactly the video. Maybe Frank did. Possibly that was Frank in that video and it was some little girl and that's possibly made up, but maybe it's not. I don't know. But we don't have the full details on that. But that could be obviously the reason why there's something violent in Bonnie, and that would probably maybe tell us why Bonnie has a murderous rage, and maybe Rebecca was not the first person she has just straight up murdered. And Eve figures out that Annalise is protecting Wes, so that details out, but she's a criminal lawyer, so she's not like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. She's like, I figured it out. Yeah, it's the puppy. But then Annalise goes, it's him. And here we go with the. I'm just hoping. I'd rather Annalise be his aunt or something like that. And like his mom committed suicide and Annalise is his aunt. Can we just anything but being his mom? Just. Oh no, please don't. But anyway, Eve and Annalise just go and they go and do the do and get it on, and I'm just thinking, no, Eve, no, you're gonna die. You're gonna get some of the poontang and you're gonna die. You're gonna die, so you better enjoy the poontang while you can, because you's about to die. But who's also going to die? Oliver, because he's now looking like a regular part of the gang and is messaging Philip, and they don't know this guy already knows about them, and you know. Oliver, you're gonna die. We know Connor's not gonna die, so that means Oliver's gonna die. Speaking of also dying, damn, Bonnie, I want you to die, Annalise, everybody die. Sam would never have done this to her. Okay, Bonnie. Maybe, but Sam was a hideous person too. Hell, you and Sam are murderers, Bonnie. What the hell? You guys need to take some serious look at your judgment here, murderers. And Oliver alone at home with Philip. I know they don't know this guy knows that they're looking into him and that he's been spying on them through the webcam. And so all of us at home can be like, no, why would you leave Oliver alone? They don't know this guy is clever and knows about them, so. Of course, we can yell at the TV, but they have no reason to be suspicious right now. So, any objections I have to Oliver just dancing around at home? Ugh, poor Oliver. He's gonna die. So, is it Laurel ends up with Levi's gun? Unless my eyes are playing tricks on me. And Bonnie did kill Sinclair. Not at all a shocker. I predicted that a long time ago. The blood she was scrubbing off her either had to be from a struggle with someone, maybe Sinclair, or from shooting Annalise, maybe, or something else. Maybe Bonnie is also gonna have to die. The title of this episode is I Want You to Die. Everybody's gonna die. Oliver's gonna die. Sinclair obviously dies. And, of course, after this episode, your immediate conclusion is, oh snap, so it's got to be Bonnie who shoots Annalise because. She wants it. She w said you should have been the one to die. Sam wouldn't have done this to me, but I guess that'd be too easy. And as our recapper here, Justin Kirkland said, maybe Wes's real mom is part of this, or his other mom, because he has two mommies, is part of this, and he shoots his real mommy, and so and shoots Annalise, but I don't know. But apparently, I think tomorrow, As I record this podcast on November 11th, 2015, super late because I'm on vacation and also sick, tomorrow we should be finding out who shot Annalise. And hopefully I will get this podcast out on time next week, on Monday, so please get your feedback out and I will get the podcast out on time, because hopefully I will be feeling better. And to get your feedback in, you can send it in, whether you want to type out an email, or you can even record audio on your computer or on your phone and attach it by email. You can send that at howtogetawaywithlaw@gmail.com. Send me a tweet at getawaywithlaw, or go to Facebook and search out the Facebook group, How to Get Away with Law. Like the page, please, so we can get some looks and get out there. Tell your friends about the show. Start having conversations with me, you know, so it's not just me talking to you all the time, unless it's just what you like is me talking at you all the time. And please, if you can, go onto iTunes and please rate so we can get moving on iTunes and there will be more people listening and just keep this show going. And if you can, rate it, and hopefully 5 stars, but be as honest as you can. Criticisms, things I can do to improve, all that, that's wonderful too. And if you can write out a comment, that'd be great. Honesty is great, but I like nice things too. And just get out and tell people about the show. Share it, all that good stuff. And until next time, guys, this is your host, Kim, and I'll be talking to you soon. I'm gonna go bust out the NyQuil and hopefully feel better soon. Peace, guys.